folks in the community like it, they can get their healthcare locally, and those who have jobs in healthcare often can stay in that community and work and contribute locally.
From InterSystems, it's the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. To learn more about this and other episodes, please visit podcast.healthydata.com.
We are here today with Dr. Dave Rich, the CMIO of West Virginia University Health System. Dave, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Jordan.
So for those who don't know, West Virginia University Health System is a 24-hospital health system spread across four states and based in Morgantown, West Virginia, with 3,000 beds and 10,000 providers. So Dave, you've mentioned, is there a different number of providers?
Yeah.
How many?
About 3,000 providers is our number. So I think the bed number is off. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, in any case, they're a large system across four states in West Virginia. Now, Dave, you've mentioned that you've been working to bring all hospitals on Epic by 2024. Could you speak to how you've been going about integrating specialty, tertiary, and quaternary care to date and how that will look post-Epic implementation? For example, with any new acquisitions that aren't already on Epic, how will you handle that? How will you handle ingestion of other external data? What's integration looking like now and in the future post-Epic?
Great. Well, that's a big question. So as you said, we're up to 24 hospitals. We've been growing over the last couple of years, and part of that growth is not just a partnership between the hospitals, but we found our secret sauce is to get the electronic record and supporting infrastructure in place as soon as we can as we bring on those additional hospitals. So we've been on this path where the relationships start, the acquisition journey begins, and then we are close behind with respect to the IT team to make sure we can get our EMR in place, which is Epic.
What are some of your challenges with interoperability?
There's, as we approach each of the hospitals, they have some legacy systems that we have to decide, can we keep or can we change over to our systems? Really, I would say the biggest challenge we face is that legacy data. And we do have a plan for archival of that data from whichever the hospital it may be. That takes more time. So we'll get our electronic medical record in place, but then we have to work towards archiving that data and making it available through a standard means.
And what are some of your top challenges when you think about archiving data? Is that both clinical data and non-clinical data? And are your top concerns kind of legal compliance if there were a need to pull up that data due to a patient request or a pending lawsuit? Like, what is the driving force that's kind of shaping your decision about how to archive your data?
Well, all of the ones you mentioned are important. Clinically, we find that most of our clinicians rely more on the current data over time. So yes, during that transitional period, it's nice to be able to access the old system and look at the data from the previous visit or the last hospitalization. But over time, the record for the patient evolves. So the clinicians don't look back to the historical data quite as much. But certainly for release of information purposes, that's important. For any legal cases or implications, we certainly need to have that. But most of the clinicians are looking forward in terms of the clinical data.
Are there any other use cases for archived data? For example, population health, quality reporting measurement, risk-based payments? Are there any sort of other use cases that are driving your need to access this data? And again, is the data all clinical, or is it also HR? Is it claims? Is it other sorts of data too?
Oh, it is both. And we, archive different data in different places. For population health perspective, yes, we want to know for certain health maintenance items, i.e. colon cancer screening, breast cancer screening, we definitely rely on that historical data to make sure that we're keeping track with patients. So that's often what the clinicians are asking for in terms of the data that they would like to see.
And is there research that's being done at WVU that relies on that sort of historical data, or is it more just to support the frontline clinicians?
Mostly to support the frontline clinicians. I can't speak to a specific research project that's looking back at historical data, but I'm sure there are some.
Got it. Now, another priority, shifting topics a bit, that you said at WVU is working to keep healthcare local while preserving local jobs, especially due to kind of some of your catchment area being rural in nature. You may be a significant employer in certain markets. Can you talk more about what you've been doing to keep healthcare local, the benefits of doing so, and preserving local jobs, how you've been able to accomplish that?
Yes. As in a time when you see or you read about hospitals closing in different parts of the country, we've been able to partner with some of the smaller hospitals, particularly in West Virginia and rural areas, critical access facilities, who may not have survived independently. We're able to partner with them and give them the infrastructure with respect to the medical record and the other related infrastructure for billing so that they can stay open, serve the community, and in many cases, grow programs there. So once we build that relationship with the hospital, we identify the programs they have, maybe the programs they don't have that the community needs. So we've often seen a growth in jobs for those specific facilities in the communities. And the folks in the community like it. They can get their healthcare locally, and those who have jobs in healthcare often can stay in that community and work and contribute locally.
Could you elaborate on some of the programs that have grown out of those partnerships?
In terms of clinical programs in many of our hospitals, in addition to placing primary care, general pediatrics practices in those communities, we've built up more of our heart and vascular institute care, so cardiology care in those regions. And again, you can think of other regions that didn't have surgery programs and were finding surgeons who can work in those communities and serve those communities.
So kind of opening up new service lines to those rural communities.
Yes.
What are the financial incentives for WVU to engage in preserving those those local hospitals, right? They're critical access hospitals. You're going out there, you're giving them access to your EHR, to your billing infrastructure. Other than kind of doing the right thing, is there a financial incentive, or are these programs a complete hit on the hospital and they're just provided as a community benefit?
Oh, I wouldn't see them as a hit on the hospital. I think the general incentive is that with connected care, we're able to feed some of the specialty care to other parts of the state when needed. And so in addition to providing the necessary care for the patients, that care is coming through our specialty network. So that's an advantage. But I really think the mission of our organization is to provide care across the state to folks who need it. So it's more mission oriented.
Got it. But okay, so mission oriented first, but also there's a added benefit of driving referrals to WVU specialty practices.
Yes.
And then finally on this topic, I'm interested, since this is Healthy Data Podcast, I'm interested to ask you about some of the technological challenges associated with these partnerships, with these critical access hospitals. Have there been challenges with enabling providers to hook up to your EHR, Epic in the future? Are there technological challenges with ingesting imaging from external labs, from external providers? What sort of technological challenges do you have with ingesting data and ensuring that providers are operating in the same space when you're servicing these populations?
Yeah, the general infrastructure challenges are making sure the bandwidth is there for internet and high-speed connectivity. So sometimes we've had to overcome that with some of the facilities and make sure the infrastructure is there for the outlying clinics, who many of which didn't have electronic medical records in place. So getting past those barriers, again, we use the same infrastructure. So the exchange of data, once we have those areas live, the exchange of data is instantaneous. And when I go to our go lives across the system and talk with the providers, that's their kind of aha moment the day they go live, is that, while I can see everything that happened up in Morgantown or a different part of the state instantaneously now that I have access. So, you know, you do have the occasional folks who, you know, if we think about COVID and remote care and folks not being on site, you have the occasional provider who doesn't have the level of service or connectivity at their home site, and we work through that as well.
A number of follow-up questions there. Are these rural access hospitals, are they accessing the internet through broadband or satellite connections?
Broadband. Yeah.
Broadband. Okay. And so you said that the exchange of data is instantaneous. I'm wondering if there's any kind of, if there's lag with your maybe high availability or disaster recovery sites or mirroring, since data centers may be located far away geographically from West Virginia and the broadband kind of download upload speed may not be as high as in other areas of the country. Are there any lag issues due to geography?
We've not seen that. And again, our technical folks do that assessment well ahead of our transition to make sure that they have the pipeline, so to speak, for that capacity.
Got it. And so telemedicine isn't impaired at all due to connectivity issues?
It has not been.
Cool. All right. Moving on to engagement. I know that the topic of patient engagement in the rural setting of care through the MyWVU chart is an issue that you've published on previously. Do you have any thoughts about kind of what your goals are, where you're looking to go in terms of patient engagement through the WVU chart app, where you've been, what you were able to accomplish, some hurdles that you overcame?
Yeah, we just hit this last month, we hit over 800,000 patients who are active in our MyChart instance. So that's a great milestone. I'd love to see us reach the million mark, maybe next year or the following year. And as a clinician, patient engagement, understanding of their record, involvement in their record is very helpful. We find that that helps improve outcomes. The more engaged patients are, the more likely they are to either follow instructions, seek care when necessary, and just generally be engaged in their care. There's some convenience aspects of that that we've been working on, self-scheduling so that patients can schedule when it's convenient for them based on availability. We've done some things in the self-check-in space where patients can do most of the check-in without having to spend a lot of time at our front desk. High on everyone's list is patient messaging to their providers. While we know that that can be overwhelming at times, I think that's a great way for patients to be able to connect and ask relevant questions of their providers. And then their providers and care teams can determine, okay, do you need to be seen for that? Or is that something we can address without having to have an office visit?
So on that last topic, you know, a goal is often more patient engagement in their own kind of care plan with patient-centered care, and that's obviously an admirable goal. But as you just mentioned, significant engagement with patients may lead to an increase of patient messaging, and sometimes that could inundate providers and adversely impact responsiveness to potentially urgent messages. Have you been seeing that challenge, and if so, have you been trying to address it at all?
Yeah, we've definitely seen an increase in patient messages that coincided with the pandemic. I think it also was sort of driven by the 21st Century Cures Act and increased transparency of the record. So we get more patient questions about information they see, which is a good thing. So we've definitely seen more. And the thing that we all wrestle with is those messages come in at all hours of the day, and during the working part of the day, our clinicians are seeing patients in the office, so they don't have as much time to look at those messages during the day. And of course, after the day's over, they go home. We want them to be with their families, rest, recuperate, and all that. So we are trying to look at ways to triage those messages across all hours and then queue up those things that the physicians, providers need to address so that they're not constantly trying to go back to their in-basket, in our case, to look for those messages. So we're working on that.
Any AI solution to address that challenge?
Our vendor Epic has an AI solution that will read the patient messages and draft responses. So we've not yet done that, but are on a pathway to do that. And we've looked to the experience of others, most notably UC San Diego and Stanford, who've had some of the earliest experience in that space drafting responses to patient messages. Still don't want to send those responses until a clinician's reviewed them, but if it can save the clinician time and provide an appropriate response to the patient, we think that's great.
Mm-hmm. There's another topic I think that's very particular to certain areas of the country. I know you've written about the opioid abuse and prevention of opioid abuse using technology. Has that been an issue that continues to be present for West Virginia medicine?
Yes, opioid crisis is still a crisis across the country. West Virginia and the region are certainly the epicenter of it for many. We are definitely using technology in that space. You know, a lot of the, just connecting to state-based resources to see what has been prescribed for a patient previously. That used to be a very manual process where users had to go to a different database, log in, get information, go back to their medical record. We have that integrated so that with one click, our providers can check not only across our own state database, but other state databases that are collaborating. We can see that information. So that's at the point of prescription. We have that information. We also do things looking for those at risk for overdose and suggesting a co-prescription of Narcan, which is a reversal agent. So we've been doing things in that space as well. We're also, moving away from opioids, we've done some work in the space of care plans, order sets, and clinical guidance to suggest alternatives to opioids for those things that most commonly have for those situations, back pain and other things that folks would have commonly prescribed opioids for in the past.
So we are approaching the end of this podcast episode. We certainly have covered a lot of ground. I'd like it to open it up to you kind of with an open-ended question. If you could wave a magic wand, what's maybe the number one priority? What's the number one challenge that you would wish to go away? What's the biggest kind of obstacle or headache that's keeping you up at night? At least technically, from technical perspective, that you would love to see resolve? Where's kind of the gap between where you are and where you would like to be?
We'll call it technical and clinical. The documentation burden for providers and staff, nurses too, has grown tremendously over the years. It's part of that's regulatory based. There's some other factors which we could go on for a long time talking about, but if I could make that easier such that clinicians could do their care throughout the day, speak to the things that need to be captured in documentation and move on, we'd have a much more energized workforce, I think. So ambient listening is one of those things that shows great promise. Other tools, flow sheet macros and other things for nursing are also important. But if I could reduce that documentation burden, I think that would have a great impact on burnout in healthcare.
Well, Dave, I do appreciate your time. We've come to the end of this podcast episode. For our listeners, this has been Dr. Dave Rich, the CMIO of West Virginia University Health System. Dave, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
From InterSystems, this has been the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. Thank you for listening.